From the studios of KXAM, welcome to Tell the Truth Faster, hosted by Stuart Altshuler, marriage and family therapist. Stay tuned and learn how you can open your mind and soul to new possibilities in life. Now here's your host, Stuart Altshuler.
Marriage and family therapist, and this is a show where every week we deal with mental health issues from a more holistic perspective, which means balance in body, mind, and spirit as a way of balancing not just your own inner self, but the life that you live and the relationships that you have. Now, we all know that the truth will set you free, but the question we ask on this show is, how long are you willing to keep freedom on hold? In other words, how long are you waiting? Are you going to stay in denial? Are you going to keep putting off dealing with the issues that you know have to be faced and have to be confronted? The traumas and the pains that you've experienced that really have to be healed in order for you to find a sense of well-being and a sense of balance. Now, this is a live call-in show. So if you're in the Phoenix area locally, the number is 480-949-1310. That's 480-949-1310, as in KXAM 1310. If you're listening via the internet, as I know I have listeners around the country because I've heard from some of you, if you're listening via the internet on the live simulcast, it's still a toll call for you, but call in anyway if you have something to contribute today when I get to the topic. And that same number is 480-949-1310. Now, my topic today is something I think everyone can relate to, and that is conflict resolution in relationships and the importance of, like I said, being honest about the problems and the struggles that you're facing within your own life, how it impacts your relationships, and learning the tools and mechanisms in order to find more peace within yourself and more peace within your relationships. Now, conflict resolution is something that we hear spoken about on all levels, on a global level, on a national level, local levels. Today, actually, we're going to be talking about conflict resolution in our personal relationships. Although from a holistic perspective, the issues are basically the same thing. I remember back in the early 90s, I was invited to be one of only about 200 Americans, and I was invited to participate in what was called the Soviet American Citizens Summit meeting, and it was being held in Moscow. And so there were only 200 Americans. I was very honored, actually, to be included in that. And there were about 400 Soviet citizens. And the idea was to circumvent the conflicts that were going on a governmental level, the treaties that were being discussed but never signed, the power plays and the struggles and the threats that were going on between the governments. So what the organizers of this conference did was just bring ordinary citizens with varying degrees of expertise in different areas, from business to nonprofit to humanitarian organizational issues, bring us together to help us find counterparts. For me, it would be find Soviet counterparts of like mind interested in similar areas to come together and actually sit down and go for solution. Instead of waiting for the governments to put their stamp of approval on everything, we came together, and I can't tell you how many business enterprises came out of that, nonprofit humanitarian things. In fact, I ended up founding an American nonprofit called the International AIDS Project and started actually doing AIDS education, prevention, and training in the former Soviet Union and after the breakup of the Soviet Union in Russia and the Commonwealth nations, before the governments got off their rear ends and actually did it. In fact, the government was actually resisting our moving forward on this. But this is a clear example of people coming together and seeing the similarities in one another instead of the differences. And instead of being afraid, we were able to see past that and see that we all had common goals. common desires for peace on the planet, for helping one another succeed. And this is the same thing that we're talking about when it comes to conflict resolution in personal relationships. It's about seeing past the differences and seeing past the power struggle and seeing past the ego problems and the fears, and seeing that you're in a relationship, whether it's with a spouse or a partner, whether it's a family member, whether it's a coworker, seeing past the differences and seeing past the fears and understanding that everyone involved has the same goal in mind, and that is peace within themselves, peace in their world. And that's what conflict resolution is about. From the University of California, San Diego, there's a website that they have, and they define conflict resolution is defined as a positive process whereby individuals resolve issues in an informal or formal atmosphere, or where issues are resolved as part of the ongoing interaction between individuals. And they go on to say that ideally, conflict resolution involves dealing with problems while they are manageable. Early recognition of conflict is critical, since that can be dealt with effectively, since what can be dealt with effectively today may be much more difficult mutually to resolve tomorrow. And the other thing that they say, which I really agree with, and I'm glad they say, is that conflicts are inevitable. In any relationship, there's going to be differences of opinion and conflicts that go on in any relationship. Anybody who's listened to this show before knows that when I'm talking about relationships, I'm talking about whether it's a heterosexual relationship, gay or lesbian relationship, family relationships, whatever's going on, conflict is conflict. And the internal and personal reasons why people try and maintain their positions is basically the same across the board. The power struggles, the ego involvement, people who consider compromise equating to losing, and they'd rather win at any cost rather than compromise because they see compromise as a loss, and we see that going on in our political arenas all the time today. So conflicts are inevitable. It's what we do with it, and the positions we take and our willingness to solve the problem, instead of seeing one another as adversaries, to actually see that we all have common goals in mind and move past it. Now, with all that being said, I'm really pleased to introduce my guest today, and I actually met her and her partner, or co-founder, of an organization called Talk Works at the Lesbian and Gay Psychotherapists Association of Southern California did an annual conference, and my guest today, Victoria Simon, Dr. Victoria Simon, who's also a licensed marriage and family therapist, and her co-founder, Holly Peterson, gave a really wonderful talk about relationships and healing relationships at the conference. And so I was so impressed that I invited Victoria Ante. So this is Dr. Victoria Simon. Welcome to the show, Victoria.
Thank you so much. Good afternoon.
Same to you. And I know there's so much we can cover today when it comes to conflict resolution, but I want to get into some of the things that I mentioned. Is there any further definition or foundation you feel we need to put down here before we move on in terms of what conflict resolution is and how it impacts relationships?
Well, it's an important topic, and you started with some really, really excellent points. One of the things that I want to say at the beginning, which is one of the first things that we address with clients when they come in for our communication training programs, is we really define what conflict is, because we believe that there's healthy and unhealthy conflict.
Mm-hmm.
Healthy conflict is really an open dialogue, including disagreement in a relationship. And healthy conflict really indicates a high level of trust between two people, trust that you are allowed to speak your mind without fear, and trust that you'll be heard even if it's uncomfortable. unhealthy conflict, which is the kind of conflict that people typically try and avoid, is when the real issues are not being communicated but are being overshadowed by the negative style of communication. So we feel that there's really a difference, and what our training does is we really focus on helping people to have the kind of communication where they're able to have positive conflict, which, as you said, ends in a solution to the issue, whereas unhealthy conflict tends to drag on since it avoids often the real issues at hand.
Well, since I think everyone can relate to unhealthy forms of communication and conflict, let's start with that, because I know that most of our patterns in behavior and in communication are learned patterns, usually,
yeah,
in terms of how we grew up, what we saw with our parents, how we were treated, how we were allowed to communicate or not allowed to communicate. What do you see as people's awareness or the origins of the unhealthy patterns in communication?
Well, I think you really put your finger on the fact that our communication styles tend to be learned. And change takes a lot of concentration and a lot of insight and awareness, so that we can really see our patterns clearly and begin to understand how those patterns may be negatively affecting a partner in a relationship. We have we break down negative communication styles into 9 different general areas where people often find themselves and get stuck. People who yell frequently as a form of communication in relationships. People who build walls around them and are so uncomfortable with any kind of conflict or disagreement that they do their best to avoid it at all costs.
Or to put someone on the defensive so that they don't have to deal with anything.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's what we call the blamer, somebody who always passes the responsibility on to the other person so that they don't have to accept any fault or responsibility. We have what we call the leaver, who is somebody who has such trouble tolerating the anxiety of a conflict that they literally leave, whether it's the room or the house or the relationship.
Somebody who would have a pattern of constantly walking out on relationships.
Exactly.
can tell the therapist, well, I've had about 9 significant relationships, and the pattern is, well, I usually did the breaking up.
Exactly.
Right.
And even if it's not breaking up, leavers typically leave the premises.
Mm-hmm.
They're just emotionally unable to tolerate the anxiety, and the leaving causes a lot of pain for the person getting left behind.
Right.
Even if it means that they return to the home or the room or the conversation later on. We also see categories of people that we consider cold or controlled communicators, people who I'm sure have seen these people who get absolutely stony as soon as somebody tries to discuss any issue in a relationship, and their lack of flexibility leaves no room for conflict.
How is that different than the person who builds the walls?
The person who builds the wall tends to just literally walk away from the conflict. So it feels very much like hitting your head against a wall. You can't get any response.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the cold, controlled communicator is really somebody who seems very angry and distant, and responds with very short answers, and is quite condescending and patronizing,
mm-hmm,
in their responses.
Mm-hmm.
They're not actually avoiding the conflict necessarily, but they're so cold that they refuse to give any warmth or positive reinforcement or encouragement that there may be a solution found,
mm-hmm,
which I'm sure you and I will get into more later, which is a very important part of healthy conflict.
Right.
We talk sometimes with clients about the crier, and we see people who use tears and overreactive emotional behavior as a way of actually avoiding conflict. In other words, rather than that being a natural response, they use it to control the other person because the guilt that their partner feels from provoking such tears means that it's an immediate end to the conflict.
Uh-huh.
And we have the poor listener, and we also have the fixer, who rather than looking at conflict as sort of a mutual relationship issue between two people, immediately sees the problem as somebody else's and tries to fix it. So it's different than the blamer. They're not just putting responsibility on the other person and walking away, but they immediately say, you know, oh, that must be because of something that happened, you know, with your parents. Maybe you should go into therapy. Let's fix this. Let's take care of it.
So it's actually almost a false compassion.
It is.
Yeah, okay.
It is. So, you know, there are plenty of categories. We just share with clients the ones that sort of stand out more and that are more clear and that we see happening very commonly in with talk works and with the clients that come to us.
Is it safe to say that, I mean, of all of these that you just listed, these are all just really various forms of passive-aggressive behavior?
Well, the forms of, yes, I would agree with that, absolutely. The forms of passive-aggressive behavior, but some people, rather than being passive-aggressive, are really either just aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
The yellers tend to be really just aggressive about how they manage conflict.
Right.
And there are others who are really just passive.
Mm-hmm.
And healthy relationships that have real luck over a long period of time and real success with intimacy and satisfaction for both partners are relationships where there's a fairly even playing field between both partners. So when you have a partner that's either highly aggressive or highly passive, the other partner really has all of the control.
Mm-hmm.
And that tends to lead to a lot of unhappiness in relationships.
What are the more common things that you find that people... I know I could answer this myself from my own experience as a therapist, but in terms of the couples that usually come to you, what do you find is the most common areas that they're identifying as conflict or unresolvable?
Well, that's an excellent question. We actually see couples, because we offer communication training, which is quite different than therapy, we work with couples in distinctly different areas of relationships. We have a program for couples in pre-commitment, which are the very early stages of relationship, in the mid-stage of relationship, and going through dissolution. So in other words, couples who want to be able to communicate in healthy, successful, solution-oriented ways, despite the fact that the relationship is dissolving or breaking up.
So you're actually seeing couples that I would have to say are particularly more conscious that there's help needed and that there are patterns that don't work and are really trying to take the higher road when they come to you.
Absolutely. And more couples are looking for training these days to get to a place in relationships where the relationships are intimate and joyous.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than just sort of, you know, on the road responsibly sticking to it. So we see different issues with relationships in different areas depending on how long couples have been together. Pre-commitment couples generally come in for preventative tools, which is wonderful, and we absolutely thrive on our work with pre-commitment couples. And you're absolutely right in saying that these couples are typically very aware that long-term relationships have a much higher success rate when couples have really solid communication and conflict resolution tools.
Do these couples tend to be people that have already gone through the cycle with enough relationships and saying, I don't want to repeat that, I want to do something? Or do you find younger couples coming in for pre-commitment counseling more and more who just are more conscious and maybe have learned from other people's problems?
Well, I'm thrilled to be able to say that we see both. We do see plenty of couples in early stages of their relationships who have had a number of unsuccessful relationships and are anxious about moving forward with better skills and on a more solid footing with their new relationship, which is fantastic. But I think that word is actually getting out to young couples who are getting ready to become committed in whatever sense that means, whether that's marriage or moving in together or a monogamous relationship, that the odds are much greater for them with basic communication skills. There's a fantastic quote from a Dr. Carroll, who's a professor of marriage, family, and human development at Brigham Young University. She, in a recent article, she said that nobody thinks that it's weird that you have to get driver's training to drive. Yet for whatever reason, couples are only now learning to see marriage relationships as parenting as areas that we need to learn about.
I've heard that quote before.
And I think that that's very true.
Yeah. You used the word monogamy a little while ago. Do you see that as one of a primary issue? I know sex and money very often are two of the major areas of conflict in most relationships. Do you see the struggle about actually being able to commit to monogamy one of a primary area that people are coming to you with?
Well, I think that there is definitely the population in gay and lesbian relationships and in heterosexual relationships, we see a great difference in those two areas of populations coming into
differences. Yeah.
Well, I think in terms of monogamous relationships, especially with younger pre-commitment heterosexual couples, the assumption is for monogamous relationships. And the issue of monogamy is at least brought up to us as less of a factor with young heterosexual couples than it is in especially male-gay relationships. But having said that, you know, gay and lesbian couples tend to be more open about sexual issues in general and are more comfortable bringing up those issues and discussing them openly than our heterosexual couples.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly monogamy is still more of an assumption for heterosexual couples.
I've said many times before, being a gay man myself and doing couples work with heterosexual and homosexual couples, that it seems to me like the last 15 years or so with the AIDS epidemic, there are many more gay male couples in particular who are seeing couples counseling as an option rather than just giving up too quickly and moving on, because the issue, with all the losses, the issue of having intimacy and security in a relationship and continuity in a relationship has taken a different level of importance in it, which means the old patterns of sexual behavior are being questioned a bit more, and it's one of the areas of struggle that a lot of gay men are going through, as you said, about redefining sexual behavior and redefining relationship. And that's just one of the things I think a lot of my colleagues, as well as myself, have found over the last 15 years.
Right. Well, and I think that, you know, from our experience, it's not the decision isn't only fear-based in terms of health and safety. You know, gay marriages are taking on a whole new meaning with the legality of commitment and the possibility for same-sex couples to adopt. And I think that more and more same-sex couples are looking toward long-term monogamous relationships for many different reasons.
Right. What do you see as the most common areas, you know, gay or straight, that draw people towards your program and towards commitment counseling?
Well, you mentioned two of them, money and sex. Two of the biggest ones always. But more than specific issues, you know, I think that for couples that we see in what we call mid-phase relationship, in other words, couples that are neither at the very early stages of relationship nor breaking up, couples come to us because they are looking for true intimacy and real partnership. And what we hear time and time again is that the burdens of responsibility have become the basis for the relationship rather than passion and pleasure and choice. And
just expand on that. You said the burdens of responsibility.
Well, that couples, regardless of, you know, whether they're same-sex couples, gay couples, straight couples, whether they're married or just in long-term committed relationships, have blended assets, have children, have families and friends that are together, have made long-term plans together, and often find that they are staying in a relationship with a person that they no longer feel connected to, only because their lives are connected in the practical sense.
Mm-hmm.
And couples really are looking to reconnect with each other. They have shared many years together often and have a desire to bring back the passion that existed in the beginning of their relationship together.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing is more exciting to all of the staff at Talkworks than to work with couples who really want to reconnect on an intimate level. It takes a lot of work, though.
Yeah, definitely. And, I mean, I do some workshops on intimacy, and my working definition of intimacy is an expression of our natural desire for connection.
I love that definition.
And it's a very simple concept, and it's exactly what you're talking about. It's like all of us are desirous of feeling a sense of belonging and a sense of safety and vulnerability and love and support and passion throughout our lives. And it doesn't necessarily have to end at a certain age and compromise being made on giving up that passion and intimacy because of a certain period in our lives being achieved.
Oh, absolutely. I certainly hope not.
Right.
I love your definition. And I think that, it's sad to see couples who have been in relationships for many years come in and are really like strangers to each other. And they are unable to really answer questions about their partner's dreams or hopes or even their day-to-day lives very often. And each partner has found other people to connect to on an intimate level, but have really lost their way with that primary person in their life.
Right. Victoria, we're going to take a short break here. Now that we've talked about the problems that people face, when we come back after this break, we're going to talk about the solution part of resolution.
Wonderful.
To give the listeners a sense of hope that there is resolution and solution in the context of their relationship. So I'm going to ask all of you that are listening to stay tuned. We're going to be back in just a few minutes. This is Stuart Altshuler and Tell the Truth Faster on KXAM in Phoenix. So we'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Welcome back to Tell the Truth Faster. This is Stuart Altshuler, and today's topic is conflict resolution and relationships. My guest today is Dr. Victoria Simon, who's a marriage and family therapist and co-founder of an organization in Los Angeles called TalkWorks. And to remind any of you, if you have questions or comments about today's topic and you feel like calling in, the number is 480-949-1310. That's 480-949-1310. Victoria, before the break, we were talking about things everybody can relate to, which is the problems that relationships face and the struggles that individuals have in relationships. But something that everyone cannot relate to is a healthy relationship that moves into resolving these problems. And so tell us the difference between healthy, unhealthy relationships, and let's go more in the direction of healthy communication and healthy relationships.
Well, and really this is our focus, and at the very beginning of the hour you talked about finding solutions, and there really are fantastic solutions. Our programs where we work with romantic relationships are 3 weeks long, and in 21 days, the turnaround we see is absolutely phenomenal in terms of helping couples reconnect, repair intimacy, and really become excited again about their intimate relationships.
No matter what their history is in relationships,
no matter what their age is,
no matter what length of time they've been in this particular relationship.
Absolutely.
Excellent.
And one of the first things that we go through with clients, which is another point that I loved that you brought up at the beginning of the hour, the leading researcher in the United States on relationships is Dr. John Gottman. And he talks in his research about what he has found over 30 years of conducting research on relationships. And he calls this the masters versus the disasters. And he's very clear, and so are we when we work with clients, that even the best relationships have issues. Couples fight. They don't avoid conflict. They do hurt each other's feelings sometimes. They become alienated, lonely, distant, and irritable sometimes. But they never do contempt. Contempt is the habit of scanning for other people's mistakes, putting somebody down or making another person feel beneath them. Healthy couples accept repair, and they have recovery conversations, and they always have access to their sense of humor and their affection even while fighting.
Which is different than using humor to mask the conflict.
Exactly.
And to mask the solution.
One of the things that really healthy couples have a lot of is they have these sort of savings accounts of positive sentiments. And healthy couples have a 20-to-1 ratio of positive versus negative exchanges. And even in the midst of conflict or disagreement, healthy couples have a 5-to-1 positive versus negative ratio.
Can I stop you here for a minute?
Yes.
To me, that sounds like even in the midst of conflict, there's been enough goodwill accumulated over the course of the relationship that they don't automatically assume the worst about what's going on in the conflict or the relationship because they have a basic foundation that there's love and appreciation
That's exactly what it is.
Okay.
And,
great.
And you know, the other thing that happens is that even in healthy conflict, and some of the communication tools that we teach our couples is reassurance, praise, you know, being able to say, I love you. In the future, I'd like it to happen this way because this is how I'm feeling right now and I'm uncomfortable with it.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but you have a caller on the line.
Okay. Let's take this caller. Caller, you there? Hello?
Hello.
Hi. What's your name?
Ellen.
Hi, Ellen. Ellen or Helen?
Ellen.
Ellen, hi. Where are you calling from, Ellen?
Orange County.
Well, thanks for listening. And what's your question?
Is getting a big reputation around the Los Angeles area because people are learning lots of good things.
Thank you for saying that.
I'll tell you the truth. I really wish I could have both of you near me. the question is, I've been living with a significant other for a while, and she has no sense of humor. Can that be taught?
Well, sorry, you want to take that?
I would love to take that. That's an excellent question. How long have you been with your partner?
17 years.
17 years. Was there sense of humor in the beginning of the relationship? Were there things that you found?
As I think back on it, never. Everything is very serious. Can you teach that?
Well,
you can obviously teach communication very well. The word is getting out. The sense of humor about communication.
Well, let me ask you this: you were drawn to this person, and you've been in a committed relationship. It sounds like for 17 years. Has this just become a problem in the relationship recently?
Well, I think so. It's not a happy time.
Okay. Well, you know, It's hard for me in a few minutes to address what the issue may be. You described that your partner hasn't had a sense of humor for quite some time. Often what happens when people distance from each other and when healthy communication is interrupted is that there may be a real issue, what we call a real truth going on, that she or you is afraid to address. And
I think you hit the nail on the head there.
Well, and until the real communication issues in the relationship, until the underlying truths get addressed, there's often a lack of humor in relationships. People find that they feel very sad being with a person that they're supposed to be intimate, that they really feel quite closed off from. So my suggestion to both of you would be to work your way toward conversations about trust and really look for what the real underlying issues in the relationship are that need to be addressed through conversation. Can I ask another question?
Wait, let me ask you a question first, Ellen. Does your partner identify this as a problem also?
She thinks she has a great sense of humor.
Oh, okay. because sometimes, I mean, there are workshops out there. If she thinks she has a great sense of humor, then maybe she might be open to some kind of adult play types of workshops that would help both of you loosen up, or even some of like these ropes course and things where you're actually taking some risks together that are not necessarily in need of verbal communication may start opening up some of that stuff for one another.
That's a very good suggestion. I have another question for Dr. Simon.
Go ahead.
I hope I'm not taking too much time.
Go ahead.
The other question has to do with whether or not, the word is getting out that TalkWorks is like the Tiffany of conflict resolution. Are you opening other places or centers? Because I have a friend in New York that really, really needs help.
Well, it's lovely to hear that people are responding to the communication training we offer. We have no plans at this time to open in New York. But we are planning on expanding through the West Coast over the next couple of years, and we will have a book and audio CDs coming out sometime in the early part of 2005.
Okay, do you have a website that I could go to look at what you do and how much it costs? Because I tell you the truth, it scares me away. Cost does.
Well, absolutely. Why don't you have a look at our website? It's at
Wait a minute, I'm writing this down. Okay.
OurTalkWorks.com.
It's O-U-R?
OurTalkWorks.com.
That's easy enough. Okay, I'll remember that. OurTalkWorks.com. Good. I got it.
Ellen, thanks for calling
in. Thank you very much.
And it's great, Victoria, for you to have.
Keep up this show. It's a good show.
Well, hopefully you'll listen again in the future and tell your friends about it.
I will. I like your website, too.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Ellen, for calling in.
Bye.
Great, Victoria. Again, I mean, part of what she was asking about has to do with the cumulative goodwill that keeps people together. And the interesting thing about differing perceptions of what the reality in a relationship is. Ellen saying her girlfriend has no sense of humor, her girlfriend thinks she has a great sense of humor. What do you do with something like that?
Sure, and I think that you made a good point in terms of asking whether or not her partner would be open to maybe some communication training or taking courses, looking into things that they can do to rebuild trust in a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Conflict is the conversation that two people needed to have but never did. And when that accumulates over time, you get the distance and the anger that becomes explosive.
Right.
So hopefully Ellen and her partner will find a way to rebuild trust enough to have those intimate conversations to bring back the intimacy.
One of the important things an important point that I think needs to be made here is that Ellen called in to talk about her relationship with her girlfriend that's been going on for 17 years, and yet the issue she brought up is relevant whether it's a gay relationship or a straight relationship. It's a common issue. It's the same issue. I had somebody who emailed me a couple of months ago who heard me talk about dating things and then realized I was a gay man, and he's a straight guy who emailed me and said, I can't believe I was taking dating tips from a gay man, but it helped me realize that our relationships have very little differences in it, and it was quite a wonderful email to get. Relationship is relationship.
We see far more similarities than differences in the populations we work in, and in terms of communication and conflict, The reality is, and TalkWorks offers programs not only for people in romantic relationships, but for business partners, friends, family members, and we also work in businesses and corporations as well as in schools. The issues really are not drastically different for all of these different kinds of interpersonal relationships in all of the different settings.
Mm-hmm. I know I've done the same thing with when I've had a client who's been having problems with a not necessarily a coworker, but a partner in a business and stuff, and I suggested that they do some couples counseling because basically the issues are the same.
Well, and we do work with a lot of business partners and colleagues for exactly that reason. People who, you know, many business partners who have successful businesses that they don't want to dissolve because they're supporting themselves and their families, yet each day at work, the relationship is uncomfortable with this primary person, and they are seeking out support for how to communicate better, and we love watching that happen.
Now, earlier on, we talked briefly about the fact that a lot of conflicts in relationships are really based on dysfunctional things that an individual brings to the relationship based on their own upbringing or patterning or conditioning. And I know that you're dealing with an educational process of
right.
teaching communication skills and teaching relationship skills. What happens when you find that the there's a basis in this for personal need for therapy or something like that that takes it beyond just teaching skills?
Well, we work very closely with a lot of people doing a lot of different work in our field. And the reason for that is exactly because of the issue that you just raised. By and large, the clients that we see are really looking for communication training, and that is what they get from us in a very time-effective and cost-effective fashion. There are certainly a handful of clients that come in who were so damaged at some stage of their development or their early adulthood that's really a therapeutic issue and not something that needs to be addressed by communication skills. What happens is either two things. There's one member of a couple who is in such serious distress that we say to both people, look, this is really not the appropriate time for you to be focused on, you know, moving forward with this relationship. First, this one person really needs to go away and have some recovery of their own.
Mm-hmm.
And we refer out to therapists in Los Angeles to work with that client on whatever issues are coming up for them. There are occasions where even if one or both parties are distressed and need some individual support, they still want to be working on the relationship, and we can certainly work on the communication training part while one or each of the members of the couple is in individual therapy.
Well, the title of my show is Tell the Truth Faster. And what I find, and I think you probably find also, is when people get down to it and start moving out of their denial and start acknowledging the conflicts that are there or the inner conflicts, the inner struggle that an individual may have, or even as they're beginning to learn tools that deal with anger and fear and stress, it helps get them more honest about what's churning inside them, which, you know, speaks to the need for individual work, which is what you're saying. So, you know, I knew it, but I'm glad to hear you, you know, verbalize it again, the importance of individual inner work along with the reparative work in relationship skills.
Absolutely. And change, even when people know that they want something and are working toward it, change is uncomfortable for all of us.
Right.
Even switching your watch from your left wrist to your right one is uncomfortable.
Right.
So you're absolutely right that it can bring up a lot of different issues for people, and it is work. We have a lot of fun with our clients in session, and there's a lot of laughter and a lot of excitement when people really realize that their hopes can be realized, that intimacy can be repaired in a very short space of time. Nevertheless, it is work, and as you say, it can often touch on a lot of different very emotional issues for people, especially people who have had so much sadness at the distance with somebody that they love and want to feel connected to.
Now, you use the word hope, and I know I've used it, and I use it often and stuff, that people sometimes get to either your training programs or into therapy with such a sense of demoralization and frustration that there's a sense of hopelessness unless there's a quick fix.
Right.
And, basic psych 101 is patterning, behavior is patterned through repetition over time, and changing behavior happens through repetition over time of the new behavior. And so when people come to you and they're like, hurry up and fix us, what do you say to them?
Well, people always want change quickly and painlessly.
Right, of course.
We all do. The reality, though, is that we ask people to commit to doing the work in our program, and the hours that they spend in our offices is really just the tip of the iceberg in terms of the amount of work that we ask them to do outside in between each session. So we really get people moving very quickly with very practical skills and very specific instructions. And the reality is that we see the vast majority of our couples return in the second session already saying, I can't believe what's happened in the last week. It's been absolutely remarkable. With real skills and real support and motivation themselves to do the work, and also, as you say, with the hope that things will be different, people are able to make behavioral changes very quickly in relationships and to really begin to feel connected. And that really feeds on itself. So that, with as the little changes begin to happen and people really begin to feel the excitement and the love and the reassurance from their partner, they're then motivated to continue to do the work and to work that much harder.
One of the first things I usually do, even with individuals or with a couple, is I have them sit face-to-face and say, a fear I have of doing this work with you is, and have them keep coming up with as many different things, because I think once they speak their truth about what the terror is inside of them of communicating or being in relationship and stuff, it usually breaks the ice enough for them to be able to put that stuff aside and see that maybe their partner is thinking and feeling the same stuff that they didn't realize was even there.
And you're absolutely right. I think, we in relationships often assume that, we're the only one who's frightened or feeling alone or in discomfort, and hearing that can certainly be reassuring from the other person.
Now, we only have a couple of minutes left for today, Victoria. Is there any other point you really want to make? I know Ellen did the job of telling people how they could reach you, which I thank Ellen for that, and I thank her for calling in. And I'll tell people your website again is ourtalkworks.com. It's ourtalkworks. You can reach Victoria. You can also find out more about their services and philosophy and testimonials and things like that on their website. And you can email Victoria there if you have a question.
Absolutely.
You can also email her or me at tellthetruthbastard.com. And listen to this show in about a week or so. It'll be up on the archives as all my past shows are. But to leave some words of wisdom for our listeners, is there any final thing you'd like to say?
Well, I really want to leave listeners with the hope that motivation to change is the first step, and that there are places now to come, like TalkWorks, where there are easy skills to be learned and a lot of hope to give to listeners about reconnecting and having all that they hoped for in their intimate relationships.
That's great. And the fact that I keep talking about therapy, but, there are other tools and other things. There are coaches out there that can help with relationship issues. There is mediation counseling that is out there now. There's such a wide range of options for people who are serious about wanting to stop the cycle of destruction and loneliness and fear. And even if you're not in relationship currently, taking a lot of these classes and exploring your own issues about relationship can help heal the things that are keeping us alone and single, or at least help us find peace in the fact that we're not in relationship right now. So it's not one of these things that adds to our self-esteem issues.
Absolutely.
So I really, really, really want to thank you, Victoria, for being on the show. When I heard your presentation at the conference a few weeks ago with Holly Peterson, your co-founder of TalkWorks, I was very impressed with the approach that you take and how clear you are in defining what it is you do and how you do it. And I want to thank you tremendously for being on the show, and hopefully we'll get you back on again and have Holly on in the future too.
Thank you so much. It was my pleasure, and I will look forward to being back on in the future.
Great. So for all of you listening today, I want to thank you for doing that. I want to thank Ellen for calling in with some really good questions. And, I put out some really good thoughts that she and her partner can find the healing that they want and use that foundation of 17 years to build on. And invite all of you who are out there listening to tune in again next week at the same time, Saturday at 1 o'clock, to Tell the Truth Faster. And again, if you want to hear any of the shows I've done over the last 2 years, if you want to email me, if you want to see more about what this show's about, the website is www.tellthetruthfaster.com. You can email me from that site, and you can find the myriad of topics I've done over the last couple of years and listen to the archives. So I want to thank you all for listening. I want to thank again Victoria for being on the show. And thank KXAM. This is Stuart Altshuler, Tell the Truth Faster on KXAM in Phoenix. And see you again next week.
That I heard of one.